Welcome to Running for Real, a global community with a shared love and curiosity for running. Together we reconnect with the reasons why we love to run and discover ways it helps us become better people. Whether it's the quiet moments of a morning run while the rest of the world still sleeps, or befriending the strangers next to you at the start line of a race, we are here to connect with others who see running as the common thread that weaves our lives together. Come join me, Tina Muir, as I talk with people from all walks of life, united by a love of running. Hello, my friends. Welcome to episode 304 of the Running for Real podcast. Thank you for joining me today. I'm excited that you are here and excited to introduce you to my guest today. My guest today, Jess Stenson, also known as Jess Trengove from her former maiden name. She was a 2012 and 2016 Olympian in the marathon. She was a physiotherapist. She was a Pilates instructor. She's a 2014 and 2018 Commonwealth Games bronze medalist, has times of 2:28, including finishing ninth at the 2017 IAAF World Championship in the marathon. Very, very impressive results. But today we're going to go into some deeper stuff, just about how her sense of self, how her identity has changed over the years, and what running means to her now, not only after becoming a parent, but also after COVID, how that has really impacted us and affected things. So I really think this was a nice, enjoyable conversation with someone who was prepared to go into those deeper topics when many elites aren't prepared to do so. So I really enjoyed this, and I think you are going to too. So let's go meet Jess Stenson. Thank you to Athletic Greens for sponsoring this episode of the Running for Real podcast. Athletic Greens, as if I haven't made it already clear, is a critical piece of my daily life. It is the first thing I do when I wake up is go get myself Athletic Greens. And even when I'm traveling, those travel packs come in really handy because they mean I can get up wherever I am in the world or in the US, take my AG and get on with my day, knowing that whatever my diet looks like that day doesn't matter because I've got my insurance policy through Athletic Greens. So AG1 is made from the highest quality ingredients in accordance with the strictest standards, and it's been obsessively improved based on the latest science. So they use the latest science to select the most effective and bioavailable form of every single ingredient in AG1 to deliver the highest possible quality and value. Now that's 75 vitamins, minerals, and whole food source ingredients in every scoop. It is NSF certified, and they've made 52 iterations to this to just keep getting it right. Now, every AG1 scoop is like 9 health products in one. It's going to give you the equivalent of a multivitamin, minerals, probiotics, and more. So if you find yourself taking pill after pill after pill, this is one way to solve that. You can take everything in one go, except the vitamin D does not come in AG1, but you get a 1-year free supply when you sign up using my link, which I'll tell you about in just a second. So one scoop or a travel packet in 8 ounces of water, although I personally like 12, every day, and that's it. That's better than pills, that's better than capsules. This is optimized for everyone, and it is just been a life changer for me. I really cannot speak highly enough about Athletic Greens. It's not just me either. Lewis Hamilton takes it, Tim Ferriss, Michael Gervais. There is just an endless list of people who are absolutely loving this product and see it in the same way that I do, and you will too. The amount of people who sign up for this and then say to me, I totally get it, I am addicted to this stuff, you will see why. So you can go to athleticgreens.com/Tina to get a 1-year free supply of vitamin D3 and K2, and you'll also get some free travel packs with that. Go to athleticgreens.com/Tina. Jess, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today. I'm excited to have you here.
I'm really excited to be here and to meet you.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, it's probably long overdue. I'm so sure we've been at races crossing paths at some point in the past, but it's nice to have you on, to have a fellow mum. And actually, you're the second Australian that I've had on this month, so I must be like craving connecting with some Australians because I don't think I'd interviewed anyone from Australia in a while, and now I'm back to about two of you in a month. So maybe I can come visit someday.
I was going to say, you're welcome.
Yeah. Oh God, I wish I could. I'd love Australia so much. And I do have family over on both sides, so it's always tempting. But okay, I want to begin by going all the way back. I saw this on an Instagram post and it just caught my eye, and it's not something typical. You wrote at the time, when I was 5 years old, my reception teacher asked everyone in the class to draw what they wanted to be when they grew up. I enthusiastically drew a ballerina, a gymnast, and a vet, like my dad, because I couldn't decide between the three. I had an innate belief we could all be whatever we wanted if we put our minds to. I'd like to talk about that because that's something that I've always felt very sensitive about. And now having a child and already people asking, but already myself being like, oh, does this mean she's going to want to do this? Mm. Or does this mean, you know, already putting my kids into a box, even though mine are 1 and 4. So I'd love to talk about that. Like the fact that, how did you at 5 not be following that traditional path of like, I want to be one thing and I want to be like a firefighter or, I mean, I guess vet is kind of maybe a typical one, but, yeah, how did you, I'd love to talk about your belief even then.
Well, my upbringing was in a country town in South Australia, in Narracourt, and I live with my mum and dad and my younger sister and my younger brother. So I was the eldest of three, and I really loved my childhood. We had a very tight-knit community there in Narracourt, and my parents were heavily involved in sport. My dad had played Australian footy, which is a bit different in the early days, and he had bad knees, so ended up resorting more to cycling. And my mum was always a keen netballer, tennis player, you know, would go for walks in the mornings, and I remember being envious of her, and I was pleading with her to be able to go on these morning walks when I was a youngster, and she was like, oh, we walk pretty fast, like give it a few more years. And I was like, what do I have to do to prove that I'm ready for these morning walks? I've just loved mornings and being active since I was very young. And I think that innate belief to be whatever we put our minds to, living in a country town, I think it almost helped me not being exposed to the city life and the compartmentalization that can happen quite early. We really did just have a go at everything. And it seemed like the sky was the limit. I didn't really have many others to compare myself to, you know, would just go out at school cross country and have a go, and little athletics, gymnastics, ballet. And I really did love watching the Olympics as a young girl. It was something that captivated me immediately, and I never thought that I'd actually, you know, become an Olympian, but I really wanted to go one day just to watch. So when the Olympics came to Sydney in the year 2000, I was 12 years old, and we actually did manage to go to that Olympic Games as a family. And, wow, and that was a real, you know, dream come true. But I don't know whether it was my parents who just sort of never put limits on us, or I was just a dreamer from day one, but I've always been driven to get the most out of myself and just to keep trying to progress. And that's still what drives me today. And it's why I love the sport of running so much as well, because you can measure your progress so easily. And yeah, I love that feeling.
Yeah. And I think that's a good, I mean, it's interesting to say, you said about, you know, the country life and just not putting limits on yourself, which obviously, yeah, makes sense with someone who is going to get to the Olympic level, is prepared to do the work to get there, and that commitment and has paid off. I mean, you ran in the 2012 and the 2016 Olympics and the marathon. You are also a physiotherapist, Pilates instructor, have your son Billy, married. You know, there's a lot there that is, you said about getting the most out of yourself. I mean, definitely doing that. Now today I want to go into a bit more beyond your athletic performances, but I want to just talk about a few things first. Mm-hmm. One being that, so you're married to a fellow elite runner, Dylan, And I just saw that Dylan got a bronze at in the 800 at the Australian Championships. I'd love to know a little bit about how that dynamic works, because an elite athlete lifestyle is typically pretty like one-sided. Mm-hmm. Like the person with the dream does all this stuff, and then the spouse has to kind of go along with their plans. How do you two navigate that, especially adding Billy into the mix?
Yeah, a lot of communication. And I think that that's what I love about our relationship, is we really respect each other's goals, because we're both in it and aspiring, to reach similar levels with our running. So when the other person says they need to make particular lifestyle choices or do this in training, we don't resent it, because we understand that's what it takes. So we met in 2014, funnily enough, at the Adelaide's City Bay Fun Run. It's this 12K Adelaide's kind of key running event each year. And Dylan hadn't been running much in his past. He came from a soccer background and he was pretty new to the sport. And I met him at the after party of this fun run and had never seen him in my life. And he just was really smiley and friendly. And it was really cool getting to know someone, at the after party of a race who I'd never met before, because Adelaide's not a huge city. You generally know every other runner around the place. So we got to know each other then. He was, making big improvements, because he had just started training properly for running. And it wasn't until probably 2018 that he had sort of a big breakthrough at Nationals and ran, I think it was his first 147, and that was sort of the equal state record here, and just started focusing more on his training. And he still works full time, but being an 800 meter runner and one that is a real kind of power speed based athlete, his hours of training aren't that high, but he does a lot of quality work in those hours. So he'll tend to just do one session a day, which helps. It would be a nightmare trying to juggle double runs for both of us every day. But basically we just sit down at the beginning of the season, write down our ultimate training programs, and then look at how we could work it in. So, it might be that I run before Dylan goes to work, and then he heads off to work. He comes home and I do my second little run, and then he goes and does his session. Or on my key session days, on Tuesdays and Fridays, Billy goes to childcare, and that gives me a bit of an opportunity to work on those days as well. But yeah, it's constantly changing, but it is dynamic and it's fun. And as I said, we never resent the other person going out to exercise, because we know how much it means to, one another.
Do you tend to pick races, like key races around the same time, or do you try and space them out? How do you work that?
So because he's an 800 meter runner and, tends to compete heavily between, it's November to April really, but he doesn't often fire up until more like February. It's sort of that February, March, April period. Whereas my races tend to be in either April or September, October. If there's a major, it might be that I have a race in the middle of the year, but our seasons and key races have kind of worked out nicely in that one of us is taking running more seriously at one particular time. Yeah. So the other person can support and do more of the heavy lifting.
Yeah. That's good to think about. And I suppose, do you find it hard when you said he is kind of really revving up in that February to April time, but you're not quite there yet? Like you're, getting to that really fatigued time. Does that help you to stay motivated of like, this is why I'm doing it, the race feeling? Or is it like, oh, I want my race to be here already?
Yeah, it's been tricky. So I was actually injured throughout the past sort of, since late January. And so Dylan was firing up, getting ready for Nationals. And, for 7 weeks there, I wasn't running at all. And I found that really difficult. But at the same time, I could flip it and see it as a really good opportunity to support Dylan and help him to get the most out of his season. So it ended up working really well, because we could really prioritize his training and yeah, it was a bittersweet, I guess, result. Yeah. It was really hurting inside to not be able to run and seeing him buzzing around on the track. But I knew that my time would come eventually, and it made me, you know, particularly grateful when I could run again.
Yeah, yeah. It's always hard when one of you, I mean, both my husband and I run, and it's always hard when one of you is going through something and you get that like, ugh, like when they go out to do their training, but then, you know, if you're going to be supportive and be able to feel joy for anyone else, then it's going to be that person.
Yeah.
So it's somewhat of an easier situation, because while it's like a constant sting as they go out and do their stuff that you can't do, you also know how much it's going to mean to both of you. If they do well.
And Dylan was really sensitive to that. He'd often say, you know, be like, have a good session. He's like, yeah, I feel bad that you can't do this. And, you know, just him saying those words, I don't feel bad, but it is nice when you hear that, you know, he's considering how I might be feeling as well.
So. Yeah, yeah. And let's talk a little bit more into, are you still working as a physio right now, or are you taking some time away?
So I'm not practicing in a clinic at the moment. I've started some online running coaching, and I feel like I'm getting to kind of apply my physio background there.
Yeah,
I just found since having Billy, and whilst I'm still trying to run at my best, the set physio clinic hours were becoming more and more difficult, and I didn't want to be putting Billy in care every day. You know, he's a lot of fun to hang out with at the moment. So this is a more flexible option that I'm really enjoying.
Good. Well, I hear you on that. I'm in the same boat. with that though, so since I have had my two kids, it's become very clear to me that I have, so my family is going to come first. That takes a certain chunk of time. As we've mentioned, like also giving your spouse time to be themselves is also important. Beyond that, I feel like most of the time I get to pick, I can either lean one way or lean the other, and that's my work life or that's my running life. Now for me, I've kind of said with my running, I'm going to do the best I can, but it's going to be nothing compared to what I was doing before. It's going to be definitely on the undertrained side. But for me, I've got so much more in business that I want to do that I'm at peace with that and my work. How do you navigate that, knowing that you still want this elite lifestyle, you still want these things, and you are also enjoying the coaching? But yeah, as we've talked about, you've also got Dylan's training and Billy. Like, how do you not only navigate that physically, but also mentally? Because I know when I had my first child, I very much felt quite frantic because I felt like I had to maximize every minute that she was sleeping. So yeah, how do you get around that?
Yeah, I can really relate to that. And, you know, to be truthful, I've actually, the last couple of weeks, I've just been a bit out of sorts. I've, you know, just had some emotional ups and downs because, you know, there are big decisions to make, and you know that it will affect your trajectory. And, you know, I've had these recent injuries since becoming a mum, and so I'm so fearful of getting injured again. And you know, I've sort of made this choice to focus on my running, and you know, being a mum is so important to me, and I hope in future we'll be able to have siblings for Billy. And just trying to figure out when the right time is for everything. For me, when I fell pregnant with Billy in early 2019, you know, I'd always known that I wanted to be a mum one day if I could be. And in 2017, I did the London Marathon in April of 2017 and was thinking that I'd maybe take a rest after that, but absolutely loved my first ever London Marathon. And I was like, oh, the world champs are coming here in August. I think I want to go for it. I really want to come back and race in this city. And we ended up going to St. Moritz prior to the World Championships to prepare. Mm. And I absolutely fell in love with St. Moritz. It's just the purest, cleanest, like, nature I'd been out amongst. And I just, felt so alive out there running on the trails in St. Moritz, and went into that London World Champs just feeling really prepared like nothing was holding me back. I'd had an uninterrupted preparation and really enjoyed that World Champs in 2017, because I was just racing free and with this sort of confidence. And so naturally, the Commonwealth Games being in Australia in 2018, I thought, okay, we'll just, you know, we better target that next. I love representing Australia and, you know, on home soil. I knew it would be an opportunity for people who, you know, I've worked with over the years to sort of be there at that race. And that was an amazing experience. And I just kind of kept on going, not really sure when to stop. And because it had been a slower, more tactical hot race in the Commonwealth Games, I was keen, because I'd had my probably best preparation ever for that race, I wanted to see it sort of a time that may result from that preparation and get a reward in that sense for the hard work. So ended up doing the Gold Coast Marathon in July. And then Dylan and I were like, right, let's go away for a few months to Europe, just to step away from the, you know, the busy schedule, just to plan our, you know, next 5 to 10 years without all of the noise. And that was a really good decision, I think. We went away from July until October, and it was a lot more challenging than I thought it would be. You know, going to Europe sounds dreamy, but I really missed home. And we ended up, I did sign up to a race in Toronto in October, which that was going to be, you know, a financial, a work opportunity for me and a way to sort of round out the trip. So I was training for that marathon while we were in Europe, and I was finding it really hard to stay motivated. And, you know, I knew that I must have been reaching, I guess, my mental limit, because I had the most stunning trails in the Netherlands and, you know, a friend, Susan Kike, in there. We didn't, our training didn't match up a lot, but we did some sessions together. And when I wasn't able to keep myself motivated easily with that sort of scenery, I knew that it was time to, you know, have a rest from running. So we kept building towards this Toronto Marathon, and I went there and I almost just felt at peace, because I knew that after this marathon I was going to have a rest, and that we were going to try for a baby. And so I was so mentally just, yeah, free out there that I did end up running a personal best. And I think that was a credit to the fitness I developed throughout the year, and just there was no pressure on me. And it was a really interesting way to go into that next phase of life, having sort of run a PB, thinking, I feel like I've still got more to give in this sport. We're going to try and have a baby, and I've got to accept that I might not get back into it. You know, things can happen during pregnancy and childbirth, but I'm okay with that. And we were fortunate to fall pregnant in early 2019, and then Billy came along in November. Yeah, I don't really remember what the initial question was.
No. It's interesting for me to hear, actually, just because it was almost like a very similar. I mean, I obviously had the health complications of amenorrhea going on as well, adding to my burnout, I suppose. But a very similar in that, although it's almost like you made the decision, you saw it coming, whereas I kept going. I'd run the PB, and then I was like, I'm done. But like, that was kind of a surprise. Whereas you were able to see during that build up that something was up. And I'm curious there for listeners who are, like, it almost seems counterintuitive that you would have run so relaxed in that race. I feel like many runners would have been like, oh, this is it. I better give this all I've got. I need to make the most of this opportunity, because then who knows what will happen. Like, how were you able to keep that? Like, with anything, when we know we've got like one more chance, we tend to overdo it. How did you keep relaxed there?
I think because the Gold Coast Marathon in July, I had run a personal best time there, and I was happy with that result. And this Toronto Marathon was just sort of a bit of icing on the cake and a bonus. Okay. And I realized that I'd sort of made a decision with my head and not my heart for that one. So I was kind of going into the race without that drive or the reason to be racing. Most, you know, every marathon I run, there's a real reason and a kind of a thing that drives me towards that race. And Toronto, I ended up just going in, you know, thinking let's have a bit of fun with it. And it just turned out that there was a fellow Australian, Sean Crichton, who was a gun 3,000 meter steeplechase runner back in his day, and now he's in his 50s and, you know, runs marathons and he does very well. And, you know, he was in the race and I happened to, you know, 100 meters in, you know, be beside him, and I remember that just immediately relaxed me and we exchanged a few words, and then there was just this pack of guys rolling along. It was one of those races where things just sort of worked out, and I remember thinking in the later stages, like, I give this everything you've got because I'm not going to be doing one for a while if all goes to plan. And, you know, I could have easily crossed the line and thought, oh, maybe just let's just do another one. But I had to just stick to my guns and remember, you know, where my values were, what my priorities were. And then, yeah, parenthood has just brought in these new feelings and this new energy for running that I just, yeah, I didn't even realize how much running meant to me until I didn't have it for a while. So that's been really nice. And I knew pretty soon after giving birth that I was keen to get back into running in some shape or form. And again, it was that sense of, I guess, improvement and progress that I loved. And, you know, when you're getting back to a base of running 6 minutes per kilometre or whatever it was when I was coming back, you know, you feel like you're making quite a lot of improvement each week again, which is really motivating.
Thank you to Allbirds for sponsoring this episode of the Running For A Podcast. Now today, friends, I get to tell you about something very exciting. You may have seen on social media, I went to New York a few weeks ago for the press announcement of the Tree Flyer, which is Allbirds' first performance running shoe. I wore it in the Boston Marathon. I wore it in the Maui Marathon. I did it in a half marathon I ran recently, actually the Together half that we did together. And I absolutely love this shoe. I've been wearing it for all my workouts. I am a huge fan of the performance. It has the bounce. It has the responsiveness. It is absolutely fantastic in terms of just the feedback that my body gets from wearing the shoe. But there is something even more exciting that I want to tell you about. The midsole is made from a planet-friendly blend of natural and recycled materials, which they have named Swift Foam. It's lightweight, it adds a welcome spring to every step, and it's also big on cushion and comfort. So even the toughest runs are easier on your body. It is made with FSC-certified eucalyptus fiber, allowing a supportive upper like hug that it gives your foot, and also keeping air flowing for these miles that we're going to be spending alongside our flyers. The external heel counter helps give you a more balanced and stable ride so you can find your pace and forget about the rest. Now, I want to tell you something about that heel counter, or the cap that goes around the heel. When they make the midsole, there are three little pieces of material that are left. That's it. That's the only waste from making the shoe. From those little three pieces of midsole, the waste pieces of midsole, they managed to turn that into the heel counter, the heel cap that goes, yeah, around your heel. Just absolutely mind-blowing that they were able to take the waste from the shoe and turn it into something else that went back into that shoe. I am just so excited about this. This means this shoe is very, very close to zero waste. And it is an FSC certified natural rubber tread. And it has this really nice traction pattern on the bottom that gives you that strong foothold on pavement as we need. It is really a good example of where form meet function. They have the Swift Foam midsole that I told you about, but they also have the comfort. It also is great for performance. As I said, I've been using it for my races for the last few months and I intend to moving forward. So friends, what can you do? Go to allbirds.com. You'll be able to find the Tree Flyer there. Go check it out. You will not regret it. These are fantastic shoes. Okay, so then, yeah, getting back to that question that I did ask, it was more about like, not that was really interesting to hear, but I was asking about just handling your time. Yes. When time is limited And you've essentially got four components here.
Yeah.
Like that you're trying to navigate around. Like, yeah, and I was saying about feeling frantic. Like, how do you handle that while also being graceful towards yourself? Because a highly stressed, like on edge person, you're wasting energy by doing that, which could be going towards your training. So,
yeah, so that's right. So where I was going with that story, after giving birth, I intended to get back into physiotherapy clinical work. And then it was in sort of January of 2020, I thought, I'm going to try and run a marathon within, you know, this 6 month period to give myself a chance of qualifying for the 2020 Olympics. And we'll just see what happens. It would have been a long stretch to actually get the qualifying time, but I was just intrigued to have a goal to work towards. And I was doing a lot of cross training, a much lower running volume than I would have done previously to prepare for a marathon. Anyway, we were getting all organized to book a trip to Hamburg and had Billy's passport made, and then COVID sort of hit and the race was cancelled and that trip ended. And so 2020 became bit of an interesting year where I was sort of thinking of getting back into physio work, but with COVID confusion and, you know, lockdowns and everything, I just sort of put that on hold and tried to look for other work and income earning opportunities.
Did you feel when that was happening? I mean, obviously there was a lot of stress just in general, and I don't think any of us have really processed what 2020 did to us, but did you see that as kind of almost a relief that it gave you an out, or was it like, what am I going to do? This is all I've learned. This is, you know, this is my career or part of my career.
Well, part of me thought, well, this gives me a proper window of opportunity to prepare for a marathon now. So I straight away started thinking of, okay, how can I actually build up properly now and realistically try and qualify for the games? And in early 2021, it was still proving a challenge to find marathons. And so Athletics Australia was actually, they put one on in, I think it was late April here in Australia, and I was preparing for that one. But in early 2021, my dad was diagnosed with cancer. He had an osteosarcoma, which was a really traumatic experience for us all. And fortunately, he's doing really well and he's finished his treatment now, and his first sort of follow-up scan was a great result, but that just rocked my world. I was, nothing can prepare you for that. We're a very close family, and so in February when Dad went in for surgery, that really shifted my goals. I initially thought, well, I'm not going to keep trying to prepare for a marathon, and then I found that running was just a really helpful way for me to free my mind, and actually gave me some endorphins and, you know, helped me to manage what we were going through. And that period of time, I guess, forced me to find some other mental techniques. For the first time, I was finding myself just setting aside a bit of time to do some breathing and try and clear my mind. I've never I found meditation in the past really tough when I've tried to do it, but I really needed something during this time. And anyway, I kept on preparing for a marathon in the end, and did end up getting an injury which stopped me from doing that marathon. But I sort of decided that I didn't, that goal of trying to make the Olympics wasn't really at the front of my mind anymore. In fact, I was a bit anxious about the idea of potentially traveling anywhere. I just wanted to be around my family. Sure. So 2021 was, a different year as well. My dad was an inpatient for a lot of his treatment, so I would go in and hang out with him, with Billy, and again, I was just trying to find other opportunities to earn an income in the way of public speaking. We have a great program here, the Olympics Unleashed program, where the Australian Olympic Committee actually pays athletes to go and, speak at schools and encourage kids to be active and lead healthy lifestyles. So I was just making the most of all of those opportunities again, so I could have this flexible lifestyle. And I've just found that that's that's what works best for me at this point in time. So as much as I loved the physio work and particularly the team of people that I worked with, if anything, you know, during periods of injury and when I was pregnant, I just realized how much I valued that social outlet of, you know, going to work. And that's where, you know, my running squad is just so, so valuable. I think when you're, when you're a new mom as well, you just feel a bit isolated at times. And it's where running plays a particularly important role now, is just the, you know, the social side of it.
Yeah. That, I mean, that's very interesting for an elite athlete to say. I mean, there are many athletes, runners that train as a group together, but typically it's a pretty solo endeavor. It's a pretty just going out there on your own, getting your training done, coming back, you know, talking to those support people, but not really what you mentioned there. So I'd love to hear about a bit more about that, because that's just not something, maybe even how you think it could benefit elite athletes to be a bit more social. I'm not saying going out drinking till 4 a.m, but like having that social component. Yeah, talk to us about that.
Yeah, so my squad, we meet up on Tuesdays and Fridays and Sundays for the key sessions and the Sunday long run. But generally a couple of us will try to meet up for some of the jogs during the week as well. And we just, I think, so I've been working with my coach, Adam Didick, since 2008. So it's a number of years, 13 or so years that we've been working together for now. And the squad has just built up over the years. And we've kind of got this core group now that have been with Adam under his guidance for, you know, over six years. And so we've become really close, and we just can talk about anything and everything. And when you've got, you know, running events going on around the world, every run there's something new to talk about in terms of you know, a result that's just, you know, occurred overseas. And we're all juggling different, a lot of them are younger than me actually, some are juggling their uni commitments, some have just started new roles as teachers, there are a number of physios actually in the group, and none of the others at the moment, you know, have kids, but they're also, you know, very cute with Billy, and I look forward to hopefully supporting some of them through parenthood down the track. Yeah. And it's a nice thing we've got, and just that, you know, tradition of going out for coffee after a Sunday long run, and, you know, we can sit for hours at a cafe, just, I don't even know what we talk about half the time, you know. Yeah. On the weekend we're talking about, you know, podcasts that we've listened to, and it's good fun.
Do you think that would make if elite athletes, I mean, obviously there is that, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like, at least personally for me, I should only really speak to myself. When I was coming out of being like a teenage athlete, had done everything on my own, I found it really tough to be around other people all of a sudden, because it was just like hard, you're immature, hard to view them not as competition and not be racing them, or like just, you know, it obviously benefits athletes to run together and to like level up each other. But do you think once you get past that point of where everyone stops competing against one another, it's not like a catty situation where everyone is just like, you know, really insecure and so taking it out on other people, do you feel like it potentially sustains the life of the athlete and promotes that sustainability over time because of overcoming that and realizing, oh, wow, actually, when we work together as a pack, we are better? Or do you think it's a case of just you need to create the right culture from the start? And if you create that culture, it doesn't matter because everyone is just going to work together anyway. Sorry, I made that overcomplicated.
I think the culture is really important, and that's something that my coach has sort of emphasized. And he chooses to work with, you know, he says good people rather than good runners. Like, he brings in people who will add something to the group. But in terms of the competitive side, I think if you take the attitude of, you know, we've got to work together to be better against the rest of Australia and against the rest of the country, rather than, you know, focusing on our state competitions. We're trying to take it to the next level. And a lot of us actually do have different event focuses. So Caitlin Adams, one of the girls in the squad, she's more sort of 5K up to 10K. And I've sort of always been the marathoner. And then, you know, we've got Jess Pascoe, who's recently joined the group. She was at Florida prior to coming to Adelaide, and she's sort of that 5-10K. And then the men, they're just great to run with, because there's not, you know, none of that competitiveness. And the men, I think they just sort of say it how it is. And, you know, in training, it's, I've always tended to have, as I'm building up for each marathon, a male training partner who I do some of my key sessions with. And I'm always just so grateful for their support. And I think we're really fortunate with our squad that we all just do really respect each other. I think that's what it comes down to. If you've got that respect for each other, you know, someone will have their good day in training and it might bring out the competitive juices in you, but, you know, you step off the track and you just think, wow, they're in good form. And
I love hearing that. And thank you for sharing that. And, you know, it's good. It doesn't have to be at the elite level. Like, every one of us can benefit from running with others, especially, as you said, like, if you have the same coach, you're working on the same plan, like, that can be beneficial. However, also, yes, not everyone is going to have the opportunity for that, and so there's nothing wrong with training on your own if you're someone, you said you're a country girl yourself, if someone listening is, you know, in a town that doesn't have many runners, that's okay too. I want to go back to the family juggling situation for a minute. When Billy is sick, or when, you know, he's teething or something is going on, how do you both handle that in terms of training? You know, you need to get that rest. You need to be in good and also even just the getting sick. Like, when, if he has a stomach bug, how do you both handle that? Is it?
We're constantly learning. In the early days, the sleep was obviously a big shock. You're constantly just kind of feeling like your thoughts are a bit clouded, and that's what I found really difficult. As I'd gone from being in a, you know, physio clinical situation where you're problem solving, and I, you know, then becoming a mum in those early days, I just felt like I lost a lot of brain cells. I couldn't, you know, string sentences together some days. And then, you know, when I get up to speak in public, I just hope that it would all come together. But from a training perspective, we had some nasty bouts of gastro when Billy started in childcare, and before one of our the races in 2021, this was when I got my first major injury, we'd had gastro, and I was planning to travel to Tasmania for my first race in ages. I was so excited. I hadn't been able to get much food down. I was just feeling really ill and sort of traveled there just, I think, a bit depleted. Did this race and was pretty happy with the outcome given the circumstances, but I, my stressy, I think, I started feeling pain like a week and a half after that, and I just wonder if I hadn't had gastro and if I hadn't raced when I was unwell, would I have, you know, sustained that stress fracture, which ended up putting me out of my next marathon. So just, we've had to learn to just be kind, and if you to ourselves, and if you feel the need for a rest day, if you've got that gut feeling that something's not right, just take the rest day. And you're constantly just adapting to change, and that's, you know, COVID has brought that about as well. There are that many races that, you know, I've planned to race that were pulled at the last minute, and I think motherhood has prepared me for those moments, because I have had to be so much more flexible. And I realized that, you know, one run, one day, if you miss it, it's not a big deal. It's taken me so long to realize that. I used to think if it's on the program, I've got to do it. And I think I'm just learning to listen to my body a lot more and just to respect it. And my training's a lot more varied now as well. I used cross-training equipment a lot during pregnancy and then in the early postpartum stages, so it's not a big deal now for me to just say, oh, I'll jump on the elliptical instead, or I'll get in the pool, because I've found ways to you know, make cross training a bit more engaging.
Thank you to Inside Tracker for sponsoring this episode of the Running For Real podcast. I've been talking about Inside Tracker for many years now because I use it often. I love getting my check-ins. I am coming up on 15 times I've had it tested, even though, as I've mentioned before, I really hate needles. Yeah, it is worth it to go get it done, to check what's going on the inside. And Inside Tracker was founded by leading scientists in aging, genetics, and biometric data. They give you this ultra-personalized performance platform that is like no other. They use a patented algorithm to analyze your body's data and provide you with a clear picture of what's going on the inside. Often we feel like something is up, we feel like we are a little off, and we can't quite put our finger on what it is. How could we? Inside Tracker is going to allow you to see what that is, offer you a science-backed recommendation for positive diet and lifestyle changes to get that area, whatever it is, whatever it finds, optimized and under control. And then they'll give you a concrete action plan and track your progress towards reaching your goals each and every day, every step of the way. Now, my friends, you as a Running For Real listener can get 25% off everything at Inside Tracker. And you can go to insidetracker.com/Tina. They will give you the paperwork to go get yourself tested at any Quest facility, and they are all over the US. You'll fill out a bit of personal information. They'll give you that analysis and recommendations. You'll be able to take steps to make the changes customized based on your lifestyle and then track your progress. It is as simple as that. I love using it. I know you will too. Go to insidetracker.com/Tina. With the mental side of all this, you know, motherhood tends to bring, or parenthood tends to bring, setbacks because of that. A kid gets sick, or you know, it's I mean, I don't suppose you have problems with ice, but maybe it's he needs to be picked up from school early, and the only time to do your session is in the middle of the day in the summer or something. Things happen, you know, you've just mentioned that, injuries. How is your mental approach, your mental state towards goals and towards your training changed since becoming a parent, but also since COVID?
Well, I think I, as I sort of said, running, the role it plays in my life now, I'll start by saying, as a mum, I think it's really helped my physical and my mental well-being to continue running. I think I feel like I can be a much better mum and a friend and a wife and whatnot if I'm doing some form of exercise. And I just love that opportunity to have some time to just be out amongst nature. And, you know, if I'm not running with my group, I'm often listening to a good podcast, which is something that I've only started doing over the last couple of years. And I just, I come back and I feel ready to take on the day. And I just know that it's so important that I, you know, I continue running. And if I have a big goal and, you know, something changes and I can't run for that day, I seem more relaxed about it, because running isn't my only, it's not what defines me, I guess. I'm a mum, and I've got these other things going on with my coaching now, and, you know, the speaking, and it just, I don't know, maybe it was my dad's illness as well. I just have a broader perspective on life, and it just, it doesn't bother me like it perhaps would have 3 or 4 years ago.
I think that's helpful to share. And I think I hope we've all learned a little version of that COVID taught us, that, you know, it can all be taken away. And also we can survive without it. You know, many of us had been in this cycle for so many years of just train, race, rest. And even if, whether you're elite or not, like, there was a lot of the running community that was solely reliant on races, and having to find a reason beyond the goals of a race to actually get you out there and keep you going.
I think too,
it's been a challenge for all of us.
Like, reassuring yourself that what the work you've done is not lost. You know, I always just think of running training as just building the layers, and you know, in 2021, when I had that stress fracture and couldn't do the marathon in April, I switched my focus to the Gold Coast in July, and on the week of the race, that race was cancelled because of COVID. So then I sort of switched my attention to the Perth Marathon, which, you know, people had said, oh, the course, you know, isn't ideal and whatnot. But I thought, I just want to sign up to a race in Australia and we'll see how it goes. And that ended up being such an amazing race experience. And I would never have had that if it hadn't been for those setbacks. So often, you know, something happens and you look back at the series of events that led to that and you think, well, it all sort of happened for a reason and, you know, this was a great outcome. So,
yes, no, I appreciate that. And that's a good lesson for us all. Now I want to go off in two little tangents here. One being that the reason we connected recently in the first place was around, I can't even remember what I said, but something about Earth Day, something mm-hmm. about environment, or I can't remember what it was you were responding to, but you know, we said about talking about this more, and you said about you wanted to always learn more and how you can sustain and mm-hmm. support the natural world we live in. I would love to hear for you as an athlete, how, I mean, I've talked about climate guilt a lot, about how we all have these kind of almost like five stages of denial that we go through as we come to accept the situation that we are in. Mm-hmm. How has that been impacted by your running, knowing that you're living this career that, yes, takes you to travel, but also maybe is a like simpler life than others live, which mm-hmm. is a good. And then how has it changed since Billy came along, seeing this person that's going to grow up into this world?
Mm. Yeah, I think I have much more of an emotional attachment to it now that I'm a mum. I don't know why, whether it was growing up in the country and sort of going out on call with my dad and, you know, out with the cattle and the sheep, and we used to go on a lot of, you know, family bike rides and little camping trips in the pine forest. I developed this love for nature and the outdoors, and, you know, that was what I guess drew me towards cross country running as well. Yeah. And my uncle lived in Brazil for a while, and I remember him sending us pictures from the Amazon rainforest when I was young, and I just became really attached to that and the idea that this deforestation was going on and the animals were losing their natural habitat, and that really concerned me. And then in year 12 for my art project, I did this huge, you know, pastel series of, you know, forest progressively being chopped down, and the effect it had on sort of the animals. And so that's always been, you know, something that I've felt passionate about, and I've always loved animals. And then, yeah, as a runner, I think you just see the beauty in a way that some others don't perhaps get to appreciate it. You go traveling anywhere in the world and you can find these little pockets of, you know, paradise that no one else has perhaps seen. And then, yeah, maybe it's social media has highlighted more of the issues, but I just feel like it's everywhere now, this idea that the climate's in our world is in a climate crisis, and then there's this information about what you can do to help, and then you'll sort of realize that, oh, but the keep cups, energy is used to produce them, and there's often just this you know, side to the story that's maybe meaning you're not doing the best thing for the environment. And it's tough, and my friends and I talk about it a lot, and what we can try and do, and we keep trying to do our little bit, but at the end of the day, I think there needs to be some big policy changes, and perhaps, you know, a degrowth model needs to be introduced where we're not trying to grow every industry, you know, automobile industry, and some of those can perhaps be scaled back. And I think South Australia is doing really well in terms of their renewables, but we don't have a great public transport system here, so a lot of us drive cars, and a lot of households have multiple cars, and you just look at those sorts of things and think there needs to be some sort of, a change at a higher level to...
Yeah, I mean, that's most of what it is, but it's so overwhelming when you start to look at your life and you pick something up and... you're like, okay, well, I want to do better with this, but how do I do that? Well, that's just the way things are. So that's how it has to be. And so then you commit and you say, I'm not going to buy, you know, anything in a plastic package. And like, okay, well, now I'm going to be eating out a lot. And that costs a lot more than it does. You know, buying that thing. And once you start to like let your mind wander, it really becomes, and it is intentionally so, right? Because then we're not all coming together and being like, this needs to change at the top. We're all kind of going in different directions. Like, oh, what do we do? Like kind of wandering around, you know, bumping into one another.
That's right. And I really like your account, the way you just break it down and give some really tangible, you know, things that we can focus on. I think that I commented on one where you gave maybe a list of things that we can do, and it just, it gets you thinking. It's good.
Yeah.
I think so many of us do feel passionate about it, but it's just that the messages are so inconsistent and confusing.
Absolutely. And that's, you know, that's part of, again, the purpose is those powers at the top want us to feel confused and want us to feel like, well, what's the point? I'm one person. I have no power to change. And so, yeah, I mean, as I always say, talking about it is like the biggest thing, but it just meant a lot to me to see that from you, knowing that, you know, you have a platform, you have a voice, you have people who really listen to you. And just us even talking about this right now, like, like maybe I did with you, other people did with you, your friends do. It's just that little constant like nagging feeling that makes you just look at the world differently. And then, yeah, when you get some kind of, I can do this. Okay, now I've got somewhere to channel that energy. Because it's almost like it's almost like we are running and we're training. I'm making this up as I go along. We're training for something, but we don't know what it is.
Yeah.
And so we're kind of like, well, maybe I'll do a bit of this, or maybe I'll do a bit of that.
Scattered.
And yeah, like just kind of all over. Yeah. But then like as time goes on and someone's like, well, actually you're really quite good at like holding a pace. Oh, okay. Well, maybe I'll go more this way.
Yeah.
Actually you're, you know, you're getting much better with your fueling. Okay. I'll add that in there. So, I just, The more I see people, especially people with platforms, talking about this, the more I just think it continues to help. So thank you for being willing to do so. And you know, I know it feels uncomfortable. And the biggest thing people say to me is that I don't feel qualified. I don't feel like I know enough. I'm not a scientist to know what to say. But even just talking to amongst friends and little things we can do is helpful.
I was just going to say, thank you. I saw Molly was involved in a campaign and she put a little video up the other day, and it was talking about how humans, you know, can push their limits and get everything out of themselves, but the world is different. Like, we can't push the world's limits, and that's what we're trying to do. And even just sort of seeing that was, you know, was good. There are a number of sort of athletes involved in this campaign. But again, you sort of come away like, okay, what can I do?
Well, and athletes are driven. I'm finishing up a book right now about sustainability and running, and one of our chapters is called like Runners Get Things Done, because we do. And so, yeah, how can, hopefully Zoe and I are going to channel people into how can we use that like runner, like drive to get stuff done to actually change those policy things at our own local levels. So thank you for that. Final thing I want to mention, Rundies. So you tell us about like you came up with this, or you co-founded this, company of running underwear, but like where did that come from?
So in 2015, I was actually living in the city of Melbourne for a year, and my brother was playing Aussie Rules football over there, and Dylan was still living back in Adelaide, and I was saying to Dylan that I'd had these favourite pairs of running underwear that I'd actually purchased in the US, you know, a couple of years earlier, and you know, I needed to replace them, and I just couldn't find that same cut and fabric anywhere. And I was really frustrated because, you know, we are pretty particular about everything we wear as runners. And so, and then I was chatting to my brother, and he was wearing Speedos, like bathers, during his football games. And I thought, that's ridiculous. You mean there aren't sort of specific jocks that the players want to wear? They're wearing bathers to, I guess it's because they're playing in the winter, they're in the mud and wet conditions. And so the three of us sort of put our heads together and thought, well, let's design underwear, one for men that addresses the different needs of, you know, running and AFL, and then I'll try and create something that sort of brings out the qualities that I loved in those previous pairs that I was talking about. And I think my husband, with he's an engineer by trade, but he's sort of in like manages projects. So he was really good immediately, sort of his strengths in communicating and finding manufacturers and drawing up specific measurements and dimensions and talking materials. That was where, you know, he sort of played a key role. And then I enjoyed reaching out to like Running Mums Australia and some running groups and getting their feedback, and then starting to do more of the creative side of things. And then my brother's sort of in the financial industry and business. And so we just sort of our strengths complemented each other's, and we Rundies was born. So we kind of can't really remember who came up with the name. We all sort of feel like we simultaneously came up with that. But it's just been ticking away in the background. The whole reason we wanted to start this business was to be able to give back to the running world, and we hoped to be able to grow it to a point where we could sponsor some athletes and maybe support events. And you know, we've been able to donate pairs to charities and support a few local athletes with flights here and there and product. But we've got our other sort of income or work that we're relying on. And so this is just a hobby on the side still. We haven't made this income earning job, but we're sort of in discussions at the moment about where we want to go with it. So we might continue to grow it, or we might just sort of let it be this little thing. We're still trying to work that out, but it's been fun.
Okay, and I can put a link in the show notes if anyone wants to check that out.
Sure. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Jess, is there anything else you want to share with the listeners?
Oh, nothing that comes to mind. It's been a really nice chat, and I love listening to your podcast. I think.
Thank you.
I remember listening to an interview with Lucy Bartholomew a while back, and that was a great one. And I just think what you're doing is fantastic. So
thank you. That's so sweet. Well, thank you for all that you've done. Thank you for sharing with us today. You've obviously got some incredible accolades and achievements to your name, but it's so nice to hear that you see yourself as more than just those medals or those numbers. So I've enjoyed getting to know you, and look forward to following along in the return. Keep up the good work. You're doing awesome.
Thanks, Tina.
Hi, friends. Just a quick message to say a big thank you to the Running For Real team. While I may be the face of Running For Real and the voice behind the podcast, there are a group of people who are working tirelessly to provide everything that runners could need within our community, to make our community stronger, better, and evolve and grow and learn from one another. We are working really hard to make Running For Real the place we believe it can be within our community. I just want to take a moment to thank everyone on our team. That is Victoria, Stacey, Sandy, Sally, Maria, Kelsey, Kat, Jeremy, and Erica. I appreciate each and every one of you and the hard work that you put in. Now let's get back to the show. Thank you so much to Jess for joining me on that episode. I really enjoyed getting to know her and just her willingness to talk about those topics. I think it's very important that we continue to raise this up as a conversation point, and just being okay with things maybe changing in a way that we're not quite ready for. So I hope you enjoyed that with her today, how to just handle adversity, really. I also want to take a moment to thank our sponsors. You can find links to the sponsors and everything we talked about today, including the links to go find Jess, by going to runningforreal.com/episode304.
And you can also find information to the sponsors there. So I want to take a moment to thank them. You can get 20% off your order by going to ucan.co and using code TINAUCAN. You can also get 20% off at Inside Tracker. That is insidetracker.com/Tina. And you can also get free shipping plus 5% of your order will go to Runners for Public Lands, my favorite nonprofit, when you go to the Tracksmith website and use code TINA15, or you can also just use the link that is in the show notes to go get that. Thank you so much for listening, my friends. I'll see you on Wednesday for a running reunion and on Monday for another together run. I'll see you then.